Good morning, Mr. Granfield. How are you? Fine, thank you. As you know, both sides have 15 minutes to argue. Would you like to reserve a portion of that for rebuttal?
I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. Have you had a chance to sign in?
No.
Why don't you do that if you don't mind? It's right there in front of you, and we'll give you a moment to do that. You may proceed. You may approach and proceed when you're ready. And so you said 3 minutes. Is that
right? Yes, sir.
All right. You have it, and you may proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jim Granfield. I'm the public defender for the city of Suffolk and counsel for Mr. Ridley. Pleasure to be here on this, I call it a rare occasion, two rare occasions this week, the Cubs in the World Series and two public defenders from the same office, both arguing sufficiency before this court. And without conceding anything, submitted my petition in brief, and when it gets granted, filed on two grounds of sufficiency. And the court, of course, issues the order saying petition granted, but I'm going to focus my comments where I think the issue is, and I would probably think Mr. Obenshine thinks it is as well, and that is the particular charge of conveying or selling the firearm to someone he knows is prohibited. Again, without conceding sufficiency as to the issue of possession, that's where the issue is. And so it boils down to factually that Winnigan and Ridley have, or Winnigan testifies about a conversation that they both discussed the fact that they'd been in custody and that they'd both done time. And from that, the trial court gleaned, and I know it's sort of dicta when the court announces his holding, but when he says, well, birds of a feather flock together, that's sort of inference upon inference upon inference that imputes to Ridley knowledge that perhaps the mere fact that Ridley's the one running around with his firearm selling it, Ridley doesn't know he's not supposed to have a gun. Ridley doesn't know that Winnigan doesn't know that Winnigan's not supposed to have a gun. So the Commonwealth's position is, well, that conversation established the fact that the mere fact that Winnigan told him how much time he did, that then now we can say, well, Ridley knows he's a felon, and from that he knows that he's not supposed to possess a firearm, and that that the Commonwealth established the facts, ergo, the law is imputed to him. And I would submit that you can analyze this two ways, and that's without conceding Ridley even knew Winnigan was a felon. That Winnigan at first says, well, I've only known him a couple months. Yeah, we did talk about that we both did time. How long did you do? 20. Did you tell him that? Yeah. Did you tell him what it was for? The mere fact that maybe Winnigan had all sorts of cumulative offenses that caused him to go in for a long, long time. We don't know. There was just an insufficiency of evidence to prove that point. If this court accepts the trial court's factual findings that, well, and that was the factual finding the trial court made. I find that he knew he was a felon, not that he knew he wasn't supposed to possess a firearm, which then sort of kicks it, I would submit, to Mr. Obenshine's very well written argument about, well, that's all they have to establish, the facts, and now it's a matter of statutory construction. And I respectfully differ with Mr. Obenshine that what the trial court has to find as an element of the offense is that he knew that not only he was a felon, and I'm not conceding that they established that, but that he further knew because of that status he couldn't possess that firearm. By Ridley's own actions, running around with this firearm and selling it, hiding it, whatnot with it, that tends to, in some strange way, inure to Ridley's favor that I don't care about those laws, I don't know about those laws, and nor does he expect or know that his felonious, or perhaps felonious, associates know it as well. So it's kind of a one-issue case. I don't mean to sell myself short in argument. I'd be happy to answer the court's questions if you have any.
Any questions for Mr. Greenfield?
No questions.
All
right.
Very succinct. Thank
yes, you.
You
have. Thank you. And you have Brevity. More than your rebuttal time left.
Yes.
All right. Mr. Obenchain.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Chris Obenchain representing the Commonwealth in this matter. And I guess I'll cut right to the chase. The Commonwealth's argument here is really that all that is required to find Mr. Ridley guilty under the statute is for the trial court to believe that there's evidence sufficient that he knew that he knew Winnegan was a felon. As we referenced in our brief, the case I believe that we referenced was Marshall v. Commonwealth, and that case cites Bryan versus United States. And in Bryan versus United States, the U.S. Supreme Court indicates that the knowledge requisite to a knowing violation of a statute is factual knowledge as distinguished from knowledge of the law. And so that's what we have here in this case. The argument is over whether Mr. Ridley needed to know that there was a provision of the statute that prohibits a person from owning a firearm and that Mr. Winnegan was subject to that provision of the statute and what the statute entailed, or was it sufficient that he knew the facts that prohibited Mr. Winnegan from being able to possess a firearm. The fact in this instance is Virginia Code 18.2308.2, which is the fact that he's a convicted felon. And the evidence upon which the trial court found that he was guilty of this offense was the exchange between Winnegan, the testimony of Winnegan about his discussions with Ridley about his criminal status. And I would certainly be the first to admit that the questions probably aren't as precise as they should have been in this instance. But be that as it may, the Commonwealth's view, the evidence was sufficient. And I would also note that the trial court noted on the record that there was no reason not to believe Winnegan's testimony. And I think that's an important fact. But the exchange between Winnegan and Ridley was, you know, you had known Ridley for a period of time before he called you to come get the gun. Correct. Yes, ma'am. Had you had any discussions with Ridley about your criminal status? We talked about being in prison some before. Did you tell him what you were in prison for? I can't be exactly sure, but I'm quite sure that we talked about it. We talked about our time and how much time we did. And how much time did you do? I did 20 years. 20 years? Yes, ma'am. And that was for what type of charge? Robbery. And you had talked to Ridley about that? Yes, ma'am. Did you talk about whether you or not you wanted to go back or things like that? Well, we always talked about not going back. So the discussion here is between two individuals who are both felons and are discussing their time in prison with one another, discussing the crimes they've been convicted of, the time that they've done in prison, and not wanting to go back to prison. And despite the fact that maybe they didn't want to go back to prison, it ends up with one guy selling the other guy a firearm. But certainly this is the evidence that was before the trial court. It's a reasonable inference from this evidence, from this discussion, and particularly where the court said there's no reason not to believe Winnegan's testimony. It was a reasonable inference that Ridley knew Winnegan was, like him, a convicted felon. And as a result, the sale of the gun to Winnegan was prohibited, and the evidence was sufficient for the trial court to find him guilty of that offense. As far as the remainder of the arguments, the Commonwealth will rest on its brief unless there are any further questions.
Further questions for Mr. Obenchain?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Obenchain.
I wish this were part of my master plan that I'd reserved, actually, 11 minutes for rebuttal, but it is not. The only point I do want to make in rebuttal is that, again, Mr. Obenchain argues quite strongly all the Commonwealth has to prove is that the Commonwealth at trial proved the facts. But 18.2308.2, after it lists all the reasons you cannot possess a firearm, there's a whole laundry list of you may get it restored. And I would submit if the Commonwealth wants to use that logic of all we show is status as a felon, ergo the law is imputed to Ridley, then it becomes the Commonwealth's affirmative burden as an element of the offense to exclude and show that Winnegan hadn't had his rights restored. Because Ridley is, again, under the Commonwealth's theory, just as entitled to rely on the totality of that statute, not just the fact, if you're a felon, you cannot possess a firearm. In the Commonwealth, there's not a thing in the record one way or the other. This being a criminal case, and I would submit that's an element of the offense, and starting with finishing with my baseball theme, tie goes to the runner, and I'd ask you to vacate this conviction.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Granfield. We will greet counsel, then the court's going to take a brief